So this week on Myopia, we return to my first date. When I was in sixth grade, I went to the theater to watch this movie with Katie. My parents were in the back, or at least my mom and my brothers were, so that was awesome. Anyway, Glenn Close embarrasses herself in this one, so stay tuned. Also, instead of music, it's video games, because whatever. Whatever, man. Whatever. Roger Corman's coming up. Stay tuned for 420, Fantastic 420 with Cineprov if you want to see that. Also, I just want to plug some other stuff. Look us up on Letterboxd, Myopia Podcast. You can see all the movies we've done and how I rate them, but interact with us there. We have a, you know, a growing community like we do everywhere. If you're not following us on Twitter at Myopia Podcast or on Facebook, we're there as well. And we love your interactions. You know, we're about to get to a listener request month, and that's how people contacted us. Contact us. Thanks, guys.
Hey gang, are you looking for another podcast to listen to? Well, you're in luck. The Nerdy Laser is a podcast, and we specialize in 90s nerd culture. But we don't leave anything out. If something is cool and nerdy, we will talk about it. So join myself, Richard Yule, and a variety of guests on the Nerdy Laser podcast, available on iTunes, Podbean, and the ESO Network.
Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood. This week, we learned where Meryl Streep got the inspiration for The Devil Wears Prada. We watch 101 Dalmatians, the live version. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defend Your Childhood and award-winning riffer on Cineprov. And on panel, we have...
Hello, this is Daniel, and I want Hugh Laurie to play me in the live-action version of my life.
Yeah, you already did that just now.
And I'm Charlie Rose. Just don't confuse me with the awkward, inappropriate interviewer.
Well, it's easy.
Have you ever your penis to like any of your female interviewees?
Nope.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
See, my joke was going to be less. Nah, you're fine.
Thank you, Daniel.
Yeah. So to follow up Daniel's first selection, we're doing the live action remake. It came out in 1996. I saw this in a sixth grade parent date, which is one where they sit at the back of the theater and I'm further up with the girl. Her name was, I think, Katie. So there you go. A sixth grade awkward.
Ooh. And of course, it blossomed into a long term romance.
I think she exists on Facebook. I don't know. Yeah, this movie's all over the place.
Hi, Nick. It's me, Katie. I took up smoking after a date.
I'm sure. Sixth grade really broke her. I think at one point I went over to her house and we played Jazz the Jackrabbit on PC.
What the hell is Jazz the Jackrabbit?
How dare you, sir? It's a ripoff of Sonic the Hedgehog involving a jackrabbit.
Oh.
Anyway, this movie is the live-action version of the animated version of the thing we just saw, starring people.
There's Jeff Daniels, there's Glenn Close, there's Hugh Laurie, there's Arthur Weasley's dad, there's...
Arthur Weasley's dad.
That's who that is?
And who is the other woman?
Oh, that's, she was in Event Horizon as, I think, Lieutenant Stack, and she's Anita in this, and she was Anita in the American version of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, so I'm like...
Her name is Julie Richardson.
She is so typecast.
Yeah, and she played, she was also in The Patriot, she was also...
As proper British woman?
As a British woman number one, excuse me. She was in Red Sparrow, she's nothing. She was in The Tudors as British woman number two.
So basically, when they need a pretty blonde British woman, they bring her in.
And she's fine.
Yeah, basically.
This movie cost $75 million to make.
Wait, what? What?
It did.
I have questions.
In 1996, Olympic bombing money.
And yikes.
Yeah, whatever.
Did they pay in jewels?
Richard Jewels.
Let's get into the other big thing that's probably going to cause more questions. Do you know who wrote this?
No.
John Hughes.
Oh, God, help us.
This and Baby's Day Out.
Everything
else.
I don't know what happened to that guy after 1991, but he just decided he did not give any more fucks.
He decided,
I mean, he's clearly phoning it in.
Yeah.
He decided that he needed more bathrooms. And then another you know, this garage could use three more car slots. And
well, I could make another move with Anthony Michael Hall, but who wants to do that?
I'm sure his publicist would call and be like, John, someone else wants a fun family movie. Just crank one out.
And Anthony Michael Hall's like, John, if I don't hear from you, there's this Pirates of Silicon Valley movie that I'm going to have to do. And I guess John, we already did that about 3 months ago.
John, do you want me to star in the TV version of The Dead Zone? Because I'll do that.
This movie is like the first one, but crap. Rather than some cute, charming dog narration at the beginning, we are introduced to a child playing a video game.
Oh, let's not even go over the plot, because it's the same plot as the last one.
Well, okay, there's some moments of, like, what the hell. Like,
oh, there's plenty of moments like of what the hell. But
on the same day that Anita and Roger met, apparently he asked her to marry him. That's creepy as hell.
It's creepy as hell that she doesn't realize she's pregnant.
It's creepy as hell that they're on the couch and then the dogs kiss when they kiss and then they look at them as they're starting to go down and you're just like,
oh.
Well, the scene ends because it's John Hughes with their clothes catching on fire. I don't know if you noticed that.
Oh, I did notice that. And I was like, wait.
That's a Marx Brothers joke is what that is.
To quote Tim Bryant, who I have no idea from, the Antagony and the Ecstasy, this is a bland nonsense of a film.
A bland nonsense.
And to quote Roger, the great Roger Ebert, it's a bland, pointless remake.
Mm.
The man knew what he was talking about. So anyway, the big difference is we're introduced to Jeff Daniels, who of course cannot pretend to do an accent and does not try. God bless him. So he's just an American in London who's
Why
a video
they
game
get,
developer.
Like, Hugh Grant yes. or like some English romantic
This is 96.
Lead.
I think Hugh Grant was in the middle of the Troubles at the time.
Yeah. All right. And Jeff Daniels was a family-friendly comedy actor.
What from what? Speed?
I'm trying to think of where he is in his career.
Well, this was after Dumb and Dumber, but that's not a family-friendly comedy.
Wait.
He was in Purple Rose of Cairo.
That was good.
He's just American Man the Third, right? Like, he's fine. He was in Gettysburg at this point, Speed, Dumb and Dumber. Speed and Dumb and Dumber are the same year, by the way.
Oh, there you go.
He was in Arachnophobia.
I remember Arachnophobia.
No, he's been in a lot of great movies, and he's a great character actor, but...
Yeah.
My favorite Martian and Pleasantville are soon to come.
Oh, Pleasantville was great.
Wait, I forgot they made a movie of My Favorite Martian. God, I love that show.
Yeah, right?
Wasn't Chris Lloyd in that?
Maybe.
I don't know. In the movie, not the
Uncle Martin. Yeah.
Yeah. So this movie starts out in nothing. I mean.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like the opening of Pee-wee's Big Adventure with a sort of breakfast machine.
I was thinking the same thing. This is also, I mean, Pee-wee, fine. This is also after Wallace and Gromit. This is very like the dog does everything. The house is designed for the dog to do everything. He makes toast. He wakes the guy up. I'm going to get this wrong a lot. It's Jeff Daniels, not Jeff Bridges. He just plays in a lot of nothing. He to me is a Bryan Cranston type. He just does the movie that comes across. He's happy to do it. And he treats it like a job. He's a good actor. He's fine.
Well, he plays up the whole incompetent bachelor thing. And I think that that's the part that I didn't like, because in the animated, Roger was a little bit clueless, but Roger was very competent.
Well, no, both of the human characters in this kind of suffer. I mean, Roger in this one's just a big dolt, and Anita is just kind of nothing.
Yeah.
She's a dowdy nothing.
She's sort of a bland British nothing.
Yeah.
With bricks in her purse. That's the only character bit we get from her.
Yeah. Well, because she knocks the shit out of him, which is funny.
Understandable, because he tries to kidnap her dog.
Well, and you said this is after Dumb and Dumber. That's the only bit of humor we get is his physicality.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Until Hugh Laurie shows up and saves that the second act.
Yes.
I mean, it's not a good movie, but when he's on screen, things are happening. So much so, we talked about in the last one that Horace and Jasper in the animated one were clearly the archetypes for the Wet Bandits. This it went the other way. They looked at Home Alone. They're like, these are who our live-action guys should be.
Well, the same writer. It's the same writer. So obviously he's going to say, well, why don't I just do what I did before? Because that made a lot of money.
Well, and I guess to wit, I saw Home Alone 3 and don't remember a damn bit of it. I think French Stewart is in it. Maybe
that was a different one.
That's the fourth one.
Yeah.
Wait, there were four of them?
There were. I thought Hugh Laurie was in Home Alone 3 because this is a Home Alone bit. And then I told my wife that when we were watching it, about halfway through the third act, it becomes Home Alone where he's falling through floorboards, shit's falling on him.
Yeah.
Glenn Close ends up covered in molasses, which is the most vile thing. I don't know if this is a phobia or not. The idea of sticky things on my neck is the worst. And she falls in molasses and I'm having a conniption. I'm like, I can't. I need a bath. I need a shower. I need a scrub brush.
Well, that was just wrong, especially with the big molasses bubbles that were like coming out as she was screaming. That was almost horror movie material.
Oh,
right there.
Yeah. This is something.
Yeah.
Like, she's suffocating in molasses.
Okay.
Her furs are ruined.
Some of the noteworthy differences. Cruella runs a fashion house that Anita works for.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, like Nick said, it's Devil Wears Prada.
Exactly. But she also has, I mean, they clearly outline her fetish with furs, and there's this subplot.
Hey now.
Furs are my thing. Would you? But my furs are my thing, and... And her heels, oh, she could just stomp on things. It's very Bryce Dallas Howard in Lost World.
I got to admit, it's the hair, you know, the white and black hair that's just split.
She
just
looks
perfectly.
Like Sia.
Well, I will say this. The movie would have been an utter flop if they had gotten a bad Cruella. But she was a good Cruella.
Yeah.
She brought that character to life.
I checked the Tribune, and there were two other actresses that they tried to get before Glenn Close.
Meryl Streep and a Dalek?
No.
There are Dalmatians that require the fur to be on me. Explain.
I would like a Dalmatian plantation.
Who were the other
choices?
Please.
Okay, Sigourney Weaver.
Huh.
Yeah.
And Kathy Moriarty, who was in Casper.
Yes, Kathy Moriarty.
Oh, she would have been good.
Well, she was in Casper at the time.
So who was the woman from Misery?
Kathy Bates?
She would have been a much more reposed. I mean, you know, she would have been a good nanny.
She would have been a good nanny.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Close wins the movie.
Yeah, she did a fantastic job of bringing it to life. And it's clear that she stole, Hugh Laurie and Glenn Close stole the movie.
Well, it's because, unfortunately for him, I guess, Jeff Daniels is exactly Roger, but Roger's not the hero of the movie. Roger's supposed to be a strong background character, but he works because Pongo is so good.
Yeah.
And the two of them work well together. The problem is here, the dogs don't talk, and therefore he's just there being bland nothing against bland nothing.
Yeah.
Against the dog. And this is the 12 Angry Men of dog acting, by the way.
The problem, we'll get into the 12 Angry Men of dog acting in a bit, but the problem with Roger in this one is they were trying to update it, so instead of being a songwriter, he's a video game designer now, except that's about, at this point, 20 years too late for it to be a single guy working in his house designing PlayStation games.
Other than they're very clearly playing what's going to become the Disney movies video game.
Yeah, like, no, totally. I was amused by that, actually.
So, yeah, speaking of playing Jazz the Jackrabbit, it's right there. Like, that's the animation. It's just like, and I remember those Disney games because they're effectively storybook games.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of funny nothing.
Well, the problem is they're treating these like serious material. They have him play testing with this child who's apparently picked the top-selling game to be released every year, which, no, that wouldn't work at this point.
I mean, it's just someone who doesn't understand how things work. And
so
also,
is this the kid that play-tested Resident Evil back in the day?
No, but I have some terrible news.
Uh-oh, what is it?
This is the same director who directed before this, Critters. Meh.
Wait, Critters is awesome.
He followed it up with Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Okay. Followed by Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Wait, wait. This is the guy that did Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
And Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. And then followed that with The Mighty Ducks. And then followed that with the Charlie Sheen Three Musketeers.
Mm.
And then Mr. Holland's Opus, the one that made you think it mattered. And then this. And then Holy Man with Eddie Murphy. Because this is what threw him off the edge of the cliff.
Oh, boy.
And then that Rockstar movie with the guy from The Office. Dwight from The Office?
Rainn Wilson.
Yes.
And then it's just worse and worse. Man of the House with Tim Allen was Life or something like it. Oh, God.
Oh.
I mean, again, like, this guy had the best start to his kind of indie film career. Critters and Bill and Ted and Don't Tell Mom. And then even Mighty Ducks, which we've done. And we've done four of his movies now. Gross. He did a music video for Black Sabbath. In 1999.
Oh, God.
Wait, what?
Time Machine in 1999.
Okay, so one of the big problems, I think, with the movie is that the animal acting was cute.
Yeah.
But it wasn't enough to make up for the fact that the animals weren't talking.
For the first 10 minutes or so, it was fine. Up until when the dogs meet. I mean, dogs are great when it comes to facial expressions and body language. They're wonderful.
People know how to read dogs.
Yeah. No. And like Nick said, this really is the 12 Angry Men of dog acting because they're so perfect at it in this movie. But after that and after things start actually happening and like the Twilight bark happens, it all just kind of falls apart because you can't tell what the hell is going on.
If I hadn't seen, I watched these in chronological order in terms of release date. It's really hard to figure out what's happening in the 96 version.
Yeah.
It's almost as though they assumed you had known what was going on when they made it, because without the dogs talking and no narration, like, maybe that's why Babe works. Like, I'm glad this isn't an Air Buddies movie.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I just wish someone could say anything, because...
This is really when it would have worked if it had been entirely voiceover narration from Pongo or something.
Yeah, if there were an omniscient narrator.
Yeah, something. Because I think the bridge from the Pongo and Purdy's life to the Twilight bark to the Great Escape, that's just... It falls apart right around there.
Right, like we get that Purdy's afraid of Glenn Close.
Yeah.
Great, that's fine. But other than that, there's no motivation.
There's this cute scene where after the puppies are born, I think Pongo goes up to Purdy and like lays his head down on hers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a dog hug, which is, it's adorable.
Yeah.
But that's about the last moment where this acting works.
Yes.
Well, right, and that's why in the original version, the fact that like they do the Great Escape and they have the Schindler's List bits are so good. It's so effective because they're talking and the puppies are cold and they're tired and they can't do anything and the adults are trying to carry them. Like, there's emotion there, but here they know they can't do it, so you have none of that. Like, that doesn't exist in this movie. Because you can't be bothered. And it was on Netflix, and I was watching it, and I was like, it's on Netflix because the good one they want to charge people for. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a drug dealer. The first taste is free, man. Like,
well, this is also half an hour longer or so than the original. I don't know.
How do you ruin that? Because, like, the meet cute happens in the first 3 minutes in that one. This takes 10 minutes and a bike accident.
Yeah.
Everyone would be dead.
And a Jeff dog Daniel, napping.
This is a Jacob's Ladder scenario. He has a concussion and is drowning in a lake right now. All right. And he wakes up and she's like, there's coats and dog food. And you're just like, Christ.
So can we mention the one biggest difference between the animated version and this version besides the animals not talking? That's Mr. Skinner.
I was going to say Hope, but yeah, okay. Mr. Skinner.
Mr. Skinner, who is apparently a poacher, and there's this whole subplot at the beginning when they're watching this news story about a tiger carcass being found in the London Zoo.
That's true.
Well, the whole thing is that he's a silent character, and he's really unnerving, but it's like, how does he fit into this?
Well, he's out of a Cronenberg. Like, he's literally just like a guy with a knife.
I sincerely thought it was Doug Bradley at first, and I was disappointed to find out it wasn't. Doug Bradley's Pinhead, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, he does add a bit of horror and, like, you know, terror.
Yeah.
I mean, in the animated one, it basically, you know, it gets dark really quick. You know, we're going to kill the puppies. We're out of chloroform. We'll just bash them over the head.
Well, there's that bit. They've introduced him as this fearsome character, and then they try and play him for comedy when that dog bites him in the ass. Yeah. And he's, like, screaming, but no sound is coming in. It's like, that's fucking terrifying.
Well, and it shows the director not understanding what's happening, right? Because the whole thing in the original is that the idea is so scary, you don't need to up it in any way. And here they're like, no, we need to up it. And I think it's because halfway through the shoot, the director realized the only thing working was Hugh Laurie being funny.
Mm. Yeah.
And therefore, you need to make a scary element.
Well, Hugh Laurie was an established British sitcom actor at the time. He'd done Blackadder and a bit of Fry and Laurie, so...
Speaking of, just I was trying to think of who this guy reminded me of, and you were doing talkie talks, so I wasn't listening. But if we were recasting this today, Skinner is Vinnie Jones, right? Right? Like yeah. the big creepy guy. And it's even better because then Vinnie Jones doesn't get to talk. Hey, come on. He's a big imposing presence, but he delivers a line like someone hitting a fish against a radiator. It just...
There's some charm to it. If you're into big, dumb, and stupid.
Oh, could you imagine?
Lockstock is a masterpiece, but other than that, he's just...
Imagine Guy Ritchie's 101 Dalmatians with Jason Statham as Roger and...
And a bunch of English people, and then Brad Pitt's like, I can do an English accent too. And you're like, no, not really. You're adorable. Hey, Vinnie Jones has 98 credits. You're fine. Don't worry about Vinnie Jones. He's fine.
Who's worried about Vinnie Jones?
Vinnie Jones ain't worried about Vinnie Jones. Vinnie Jones is fine whenever Vinnie Jones decides that Vinnie Jones is fine.
I had a crush on Vinnie Jones in the 90s. I'm just putting that out there.
Because you wanted men whose head came almost to a point, but then they shaved the top of it off?
Well, you know, that rough British thing really, really worked for me.
I mean the hooligan type. I get you.
Exactly. Was it that scene in Snatch where he traps that guy's head in a doorway and has him listen to Madonna?
You know, hey...
All right.
He wants to know what love is.
If I recall correctly, it was indeed Lucky Star that they were listening to.
I mean, that was a deep pull.
The fact that you can recall that level of detail.
I saw it like
Bravo.
Within the past month, so that's probably it.
I mean, I will say, I find him good when he's good, but he shouldn't hold anything down. He needs to be the heavy, right? He needs to be the guy at the back.
Like in Eurotrip.
Or like Juggernaut in X-Men 3.
Oh, please. Oh come on. You're the nerd here. You're the nerd here. You should know better than that. You're even wearing Gambit purple tonight.
Yeah.
I'm the Juggernaut, bitch. The second you're quoting E-Bomb's World on a movie, you need to be doing something better with your life. Now, we can all agree that third one needed Singer before he was a rape. I like the new trilogy even Apocalypse. Yes. That one, X-Men. We haven't done it yet. That's an episode. The third one, X-Men Last Stand.
X-Men 3.
The first three X-Men are...
Because we did number one, but number three is
number
just...
Except number two is amazing.
The best line of the third one is when Magneto sees Rogue again, and they're all snickering together, and he goes, love what you've done with your hair. Just sassy Magneto is something I didn't know I needed.
There is one genuinely...
But it is definitely something you needed.
How could you not? Especially since it's Patrick Stewart on the other end. He's Professor X, and he's shaking his... He's tisking, practically, when they're making fun of Rogue.
Well, there is one genuinely great moment in X-Men 3. Well, there's two genuinely great moments. The first is Professor X's death scene, which, sorry, it's a 13-year-old movie at this point, so spoilers, where, Dark Phoenix makes him explode, and then Magneto's in the room and starts, like, yelling out when he sees that.
Yeah.
And then I think it's, who's the fire guy?
Pyro,
yeah.
Pyro says something like condescending about his death, and Magneto like pulls him aside in public. It's like, he did more for our kind than you can ever imagine.
The rest is garbage.
Yeah,
is trash.
Those two moments are amazing.
Yeah, and we'll see. Starting in July, I get the first month, but after that, Charlie will get a month. We'll see what he picks.
If you make us watch fucking Xanadu, I swear to Christ.
La, la, la.
We're having a fabulous film month, and Charlie's at the helm.
That's the theme.
Why is every movie directed by John Waters, Charlie?
Cereal.
Good morning, Baltimore.
Okay. All right. Back on track.
Never. Anyway, so what do we get here? Horace and Jesper are Hugh Laurie and
Arthur
Weasley. And Hugh Laurie, who I thought was replacing Daniel Stern in a Home Alone movie, steals the pants off this movie.
True, but so in the animated, I mean, yes, there was a little bit of a comedy element when they were like chasing after the puppies, but it was more like suspenseful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It wasn't,
well, they're treated more like cartoon characters in this version than they were in the animated version.
I was going to say that.
I mean, there's that scene where they get electrocuted on the fence with sparks coming out of them. There's that scene where, Jasper freezes to death and then melts later?
No, totally. I mean, they play up all the slapstick on that.
Well, and here, it's really dictated by the fact that it's the only thing that they've got going. So they give Hugh Laurie reign to do whatever he wants. And we even get like little like punch-up jokes when they go to see Skinner. Now, the one thing about Skinner is you can't mention his scar. And don't talk to him.
Don't look him in the eye or something like that.
Whatever it is, it's a scene out of Lockstock almost.
Yeah.
And he goes, "Holy shit, look at that scar!" And he was like, "One second, please." And you just hear him punching the shit out of this poor fat man.
It's great. I mean, I loved it, but I just
they're from another movie.
It really was.
It's a Home Alone.
That would have been a fantastic.
To be fair, though, to both of us, three of us. It would have been better if it had been directed by Chris Columbus. If there was a little bit more Chris...
Nothing is ever better when it's directed by Chris Columbus.
How could this be worse?
What? You heard me.
How could this be worse? Honestly, if you made it more Christmassy and more kid-friendly, this movie doesn't know what it wants to be. At least Chris Columbus knows if he wants to make it funny, it can be funny. He did the first Home Alone, that's fine. And he did the first Harry Potter, it's fine. He also did the second Harry Potter, which is garbage.
Chris Columbus,
both of his Harry Potter movies are garbage.
Chris Columbus is consistent in what he delivers.
Which is crap.
Oh. No, which is family fun.
No, he is like his namesake. He spreads suffering and disease wherever he goes.
Columbus, Ohio? Good. I don't know. He's a billionaire from making movies. He's fine with me.
He did that one movie... Like I
The
love
Help?
You, I Love You, Beth Coo. Oh, he did The Help?
Yeah, he produced it.
Oh, he produced it. I was about to say, I know he directed I Love You, Beth Cooper, which is like this horrendous bomb.
I'm trying to think of what he made. He's directing the Five Nights at Freddy movies.
Wait. He directed Pixels?
He did.
The Adam Sandler
Pixels? Oh, no, I mean, no, don't worry. He lost it. He also directed Adventures in Babysitting.
I love that movie.
He also directed previous episode, Mrs. Doubtfire. And Bicentennial Man and the Rent movie.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Uh-huh.
Well,
this man should just be ashamed of himself.
Uh-huh. Well, granted, he made a few poor life choices, but...
Home Alone 2 with Donald Trump. I fast forward through that whole movie until the slapstick happens. It has one of my favorite... a guaranteed laugh, okay? This is an episode, so we'll talk about it again, but... When Harry's head is, not Harry, the other one. Who's
Marv?
Marv. They're Harry and Marv. Marv falls for three stories, and then Harry lights his head on fire, and the sink isn't working, but he sees the toilet, and he sticks his head in the toilet. The toilet is filled with gasoline, and they cut to an exterior shot of the building, and the whole building lights up like a Christmas tree for
Which
a second.
Means he should be dead, but he's
not. They're dead in every single one of these things. That's the hardest I laugh every Christmas.
Why couldn't that be Trump sticking his flaming head into
Because Trump is giving a kid the wrong directions in a hotel at the time.
Well, how would Trump know which way is left?
He doesn't own it. I have no idea.
Sold that hotel for a loss.
Yeah, that's about right. At this point, Trump is selling something for a loss, and Hugh Laurie is trying to kill a bunch of puppies.
Well, the whole thing that inspires that is Anita's work for Cruella, where she's showing her the sketches about, like, spotted outfits. And
yeah, inspired by her dogs.
Yeah. Oh.
And she's like, but what if we didn't have to dye the fabric? What if we used your dogs?
It would be like I'm wearing your dogs.
And the camera just looks at her eyes as though it's like, I don't know.
And Anita's like, okay.
Right. It becomes like an English realist film. It becomes like a Kubrick or something. It's just like, oh, she's really using my dogs. And
oh, wouldn't that have been great if there was like this minute-long shot of Cruella giving the Kubrick stare?
Oh, no. What I want is a Scorsese shot of them following through the house as they're trying to kill the dogs.
Here you go.
But anyway, the only reason I bring all this up is the first half of the movie is identical to the other one, just worse in every way.
Yeah.
The meet cute takes twice as long.
Well, the thing that makes it worse to me is Jeff Daniels.
You don't like him?
He is a perfectly charming actor, but he is just so poorly cast, and they so poorly adapt his character for this movie.
So here's the thing. Jeff Daniels is more of a sad sack in this movie, whereas Roger is in the anime movies more charming and endearing. Yeah,
there's no charm to this guy. Yeah,
exactly. Well, I agree.
I
agree with Daniel.
Weird. Yeah, how does that feel?
Feels dirty.
Yeah.
But go on.
You're right, though. I mean, Roger was never a sad sack beyond how Pongo perceived him. This
Correct.
Film, he is.
Yeah.
Well, which it would have been that way with any actor, though. So I don't blame Jeff Daniels. I just blame the script.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and to your point, it's not that it should be Jeff Daniels or not. It's just that the character in the first one is more of a Jim Parsons. Like, he doesn't realize he needs a woman. He doesn't realize he needs anything. He's perfectly fine in his work. Jeff Daniels is just playing it like, oh, God, this kid doesn't like my game. Oh, it's.
But I work so hard programming.
I'm an American in England, and they have funny accents, and it's weird.
Oh.
Well, you know, one of the more interesting things is that the reason why the video game was having trouble was because the dog catcher, which was the villain of the game, was not scary enough.
Okay,
they cast Satan.
No, again, this came out in 1996. That's the year that the PlayStation came out. That's the year I think that the N64 came out.
How the hell
is one child determining what game gets released?
Oh, you didn't recognize him? That's Chris Hardwick being a young prick. Oh, I'm the Nerdist.
I'm the king of nerd culture, and I determine all things.
I just happen to be a sexy teen who worked with Jenny McCarthy before she was anti-vax.
Oh, God.
Right? I mean, but that's what it is. He's just, because he's playing a kid who's heard of video games, and, I mean,
interesting graphics.
Interesting graphics, charming characters. If only you could have a villain, and you're just like, my God, is this going to be the next Blofeld?
Oh, and
like,
this is a literal cartoon pixel game. Mm-hmm. So this really is like a Sega CD game.
And the worst is that it's just Pongo from 101 Dalmatians, the animated one.
It's the same
literally.
Character.
If anyone ever played Epic Mickey or Kingdom Hearts, it's that kind of a thing where it's just, it's the character. Why bother? Like, it's
Final Fantasy VII was getting made around this time. Was this kid playtesting Final Fantasy VII?
He hated it. He's Roger Ebert, but he loved the Spawn game. But I mean, to me, the whole thing about it is the music thing is so simple.
Yeah. No,
right?
The music would have been so much better, but they wanted to be hip and trendy and up to date.
How great would it have been if Jeff Daniels was a bullshit producer for a boy band? It's 96. Like, he was a dickhole.
Oh, my God. Oh, well, I've already... Thank you for inspiring me for my first choice on my movie month.
All right.
What? Spice Girls?
No.
The Spice World?
Josie and the Pussycats.
Oh, shit.
I'm not above murdering you.
All right.
But
so,
he's so charming.
You notice how we keep trying to get away from this movie because it is really
terrible. Movie is so nothing. And I mean, the thing is, again, if you had Christine Cavanaugh voicing someone like you did in Babe, which was not that far away, you'd have charm. And just
notice how Babe got nominated for Best Picture.
And Cromwell got won, didn't he?
He didn't win, but
he got nominated.
But he got nominated. And okay. The problem with this movie is that it's relying too much on cute animals to carry it. And that's not good enough.
No.
It's the same plot. So where this movie fell apart for me was the Twilight Bark scene because they don't explain what's happening.
Yeah.
So it's literally like the Star Wars Holiday Special where there's like this 10-minute sequence where nobody has any clue what's going on because it's all just animal noises.
And sexy dancing?
Oh, well, that comes later in this movie. That's one of the games Roger is designing.
But it is nice because Cruella does get, like, they get the police involved. They investigate her house based upon these random charges. Mm-hmm. Apparently, in London, you can get a search warrant based on hearsay. And they found the lion, the spotted leopard print in her house.
Which she stole. She murdered an animal in the zoo? Okay. Yes.
Well, Mr. Skinner did that. She just bought the fur.
Exactly.
Oh, that was such a creepy scene, though, when she's got the fur on her neck with the head, and she's like going mirror, mirror on the wall, and then the tiger's going, "You're the fairest of them all."
Well, and then Skinner looks like a Victorian-era doctor lining up his surgeon's coat.
I mean,
this movie had a thing out for the fur industry, which I get, but this is a G-rated movie for kids. Yeah. Figure out who your audience is, man.
Speaking of that, let's go over, since this was the 90s, the poorly aged CGI.
So let's catch Daniel up. At least if I know the scene you're talking about, which I don't, but I'm going to make it up. Hugh Laurie and Chuck are in the house, and they're running around. They're running around. The animals are escaping, like before. They go to the top, and then they're trying to get the dogs down a rain chute.
That is exactly the scene talking about. Right.
And the downspout all of a sudden turns into Splash Mountain or some shit, and the dogs look like the flattest of puppets. Like, I don't even...
Yeah,
it looked terrible.
I mean, I'm against... I've seen Milo and Otis, and that's the cruelest movie that exists, possibly. They're on their fourth Otis today. Here's the thing. Put a dog down a rain spout. Like, this thing looks atrocious.
It's not. That was the scene I was thinking of. The other terrible scene comes at the end where the dogs are all, I think, watching the kid play the video game, and they're all like bouncing their heads in unison. And it's like, oh my God, that's the creepiest. That's like an Aphex Twin video.
I mean, there's a scene in Batman. I think it's the animated series. It might be Batman Beyond. But there's just like a bunch of bobbleheads. It's the most horrifying thing in the world. I'm not afraid of them. I have two in the basement. I've heard of things. But here's like 1,000 of them. There's 101 of these fuckers. And their heads are moving in unison. And it's bad clip art by the end, man. Like, it's a $75 million movie. Where did the movie go? Jeff Daniels only has two nostrils, man. It can't be blow.
Jesus.
Here's the thing. You can have a bland nothing. The rest of everything should be animals. The animals were so good in this.
But they don't talk, so you never understand, like, what they are. At first, again, for, like, the first half an hour
Fuck
to
you.
45
Let
minutes.
Let Philip Glass make the soundtrack, and then everyone else can be silent, man. Make whatever that fucking movie is.
Koyaanisqatsi.
That's the one. Koyaanisqatsi with dogs.
They kind of do that for the first 45 minutes, because, again, Pongo and Purdy act like dogs, and their puppies act like dogs.
Yeah.
After they get into the second act, all the animals act like cartoon characters. They're doubling over with laughter whenever a plane goes right. Yeah, they're like anticipating what humans are doing. No.
You're absolutely right. That's where it all fell apart, and it didn't get better. It started out, you know what? I can't. I just really can't anymore.
I mean, the problem with this movie is what Charlie said. Why? I can't.
Well, it's why I've been skeptical of Disney live action remakes ever since they started doing that. It's because we've already lived through that and it didn't go well.
The first, I think the biggest issue with the newest round is the first one was made by Jon Favreau with the Jungle Book. And Favreau can do this stuff.
Yeah.
Very few others can. And the thing is, they're pretending like other ones didn't happen. Like, say, the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland, which a decade ago was the wettest fart of a movie.
And it grossed $1 billion somehow.
Yeah.
It looked pretty, but the...
It looked pretty.
You know, there's something with him was about androgynous pale women that he just loves. So they had to find a Polish woman who couldn't speak English, and you can tell. You can tell. Luckily, Johnny Depp is there to drink wine throughout the entire thing and pretend like he still matters.
I actually just watched Crimson Peak the other night, which has Alice in it. Mia, Wasikowska?
Yeah, Wasikowska. Yeah.
Okay. okay. I at least tried to pronounce her name.
But I didn't bother.
She can actually act, but...
She's fine. The thing is, she doesn't need to be the warrior princess at the end of a movie. Never. Never in a million years. And guess what? That one made a sequel. I'm glad they didn't do 102 Dalmatians.
An animated series on Fox.
Because they didn't have enough stations themselves, did they?
No, they didn't.
No. No, why would they?
Was it Fox or... I don't give a fuck.
You could look, but why would you bother? Yeah. Hey, you guys want to talk about how this movie ends? Guess what? Instead, the cops show up with their hat in hand. They're like, oh, you know, we'd be so terribly befuddled if we just have to send these pets to the pound and have them all put down. Would you like some dogs? Right? Right? I mean, that's how...
And then they take in 101 dogs.
Out of six paddy wagons or whatever.
And the cops that give the title, there's that one who's talking, well, there must be 100 Dalmatians here. Well, make that 101.
Which is the scene out of, again, a war movie where there's the one limping dog and a puppy.
The straggling one comes over the hill.
Well, I mean, and the only thing
the snow-covered hill.
Take my love and I took it down. Right? The only thing I've mentioned here is this one, at least, Cruella de Vil gets comeuppance rather than a grisly car accident death.
Yeah.
Because a bunch of animals who are sentient start kicking her ass.
Yes.
Because at one point she even goes, and at one point you'll be a banger at the end of some shitty mash or whatever she says. And a horse kicks her through a wall into a bucket of molasses and then into some pig slop.
Well, she grabs the pig's tail because she thinks it's a Dalmatian, and when she does, the pig falls on top of her, which is this Home Alone moment, because that would have killed her, because this was a giant
pig.
This
is a huge pig, yeah.
Well, that's one thing animation does, which people don't realize, is that even if it's, I mean, hell, it's even if it's fucking Toy Story, humanity has... like a magic property, right? Like Sid can be scared to death, but he's not going to die. Here, you can never convince me. Even in a cute movie like Mousetrap, at a certain point, you know, like people are going to die, man. The guy from Wings is going to be crushed to death, you know?
The thing about cartoons is whenever you see a human in pain, like 30 seconds later, they're back in business and you're like, oh, okay, well... The time may work. They may have had to go to the hospital, but now they're back in business. We accept the fact that this is a cartoon, so people just aren't feeling pain. When you see it in live action, especially when the first act is so committed to that, it's impossible to not see these people getting hurt and me going, are we sure that they're not going to a hospital? Are we sure that we're not going to have to notify their next of kin? What is this?
Jasper being frozen solid?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he practically gets shattered by an ice pick. Like, you know what I mean?
It's practically the Terminator 2 scene.
Well, and like, again, I know Daniel hates him because he breathes or whatever. But, I mean, it's why Christopher Columbus works in the first Home Alone. Like, there's no charm to any of these characters other than Hugh Laurie. And if there's no charm throughout the rest, you can't fix it. You know, like Home Alone, I love. It is a very uneven movie. Like, you have the scene with the old man in the church, and he's like, this is the only way I can see my grandchild. And are you ever ashamed of things you've done?
I mean, the guy from Christine who sold Christine to the teenager?
Right. It's a beautiful scene. And then he's like, now time to murder some felons. And then the murdering scene is hilarious.
That's the thing with John Hughes in the 90s. It was like half grounded reality, which Home Alone is for like its first act. It's about this kid who's alienated from
his family.
Make
one correction to you. That's the 80s. This movie is the 90s when he gave up and just wanted a boat.
Okay, that's
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, because he was writing cartoons at that point, but they weren't getting made into cartoons.
And that's when we get things like Baby's Day Out, which should be a cartoon, but isn't. For people who actually listen to this, stay tuned. In a month and a half, we're doing Mr. Magoo. But, like...
God, why? Anyway.
Exactly. Fucking why? But here's the thing. This movie should be one or the other. It should be dark and bleak like the cartoon was, or it should go full cartoonish to resolve the fact that this isn't a cartoon. It's neither. Final judgments, it's shit. Charlie, give me your thoughts.
The problem is that you'll always compare it against the animated movie. And because of that, this movie will be crap, no matter what. No matter its redeeming qualities, no matter how delightful Glenn Close is or Hugh Laurie is, it's crap compared to the animated movie. I just really don't know what to say. It does not hold up. It is not a good adaptation. Just don't see it. Don't waste your time.
Thanks. Danny Boy.
Oh, boy. Here we go. It's pointless. I mean, they already had a perfectly good script and a perfectly good version that they made. And this is the same problem that I'm thinking of whenever they announce like a live action remake of The Lion King. Why bother? There's just no way.
It's announced and being made, by the way.
Oh, I know it's getting made and it's getting released this year, but there's just no point to it. I mean, it's not going to have the same emotional impact as everybody's seen before, even if it's good. And in this case, when it's bad, you're just constantly comparing it to the original version that came out, which was better scripted. It was a lot tighter. The characters were more charming. And the reality that it presented, you know, didn't make you question, like, oh my God, are these people actually dead? It just didn't work.
It's the worst. It's a shame. I wish it didn't exist, because then you'd realize that there was a better version out there. And what's worst is you wouldn't understand what was happening half the time if we hadn't watched the animated version as well. Because, like, the Twilight bark thing, not explained, just dogs barking.
For like 10 minutes.
And there's no dialogue. There's no explanation. Again, if at least you had done like a Babe thing where it was Frank Welker talking to Christine Cavanaugh. Something, anything, right? Like, they could still bark then, and then it would feel like there was anything. This just feels like a waste of celluloid, man. I mean, the best thing I have about it is remembering that I went on a date with Katie Boone to see a movie, like, to a theater that's now defunct and, like, burned down. I don't know. It's filled with rats. It doesn't exist. There's something so lacking in a movie that has no hope. We didn't even talk about this. Watch the Simpsons episode. It does a better job. It's two years before this.
Yes.
See my vest. Made him real gorilla chest. It's so good. And Bart even goes, man, you need the song. Na 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 na. It gets all the right points. It's funny. And it's 22 and a half minutes. This movie is longer. This movie is longer than the original by as long as the Simpsons episode is. You could watch the original and the Simpsons episode, and it still comes in shorter than this Glenn Close nightmare. And the best you get is her drowning in molasses. So tune in next week and every future week as we put a piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Defender Childhood is produced by Do Better Podcasting and a member of the ESO Network. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Daniel Suttis and Ann Burr. It is produced by Daniel Suttis, Matthew Quinn, and Ann Burr. Thomas Herman is our consultant. Nick Hoffman is our executive producer. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find it at incompetech.com. It is licensed under the Creative Commons license. Thanks.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.